This episode of AVXL was recorded on March 7th, 2017. We've got YouTube going all in on TV streaming. They may be your new cable system. Spotify might be bringing the lossless. AV101, electrostatics, and I got to listen to $105,000 worth of electrostatic gear. Robert got the inside tour of the LG W7 wallpaper, people. That thing is stupid thin and stupid pretty, according to the tests, and a look inside Dolby Labs, all that. And hey, we got a couple of patron hangouts coming out, March 16th and March 30th. And a big thank you to everyone that keeps AVXL running by contributing at patreon.com/AVXL. We thank each and every one of you. You make the show possible.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content, no matter what your budget is. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
And if I drift off during this, I'd like to apologize in advance to each and every one of you listening to AVXL, because Robert has...
The plague?
No.
Well, I have that too. This is like a terrible, terrible cold. It's just laid me sideways. The flu shot did nothing. No, you know what? The flu shot helped me dodge about probably 3 or 4 other colds, but then the roommate brought home one that just laid everyone out. I think it even got the pet sick.
It even got the pet sick.
Yeah, everyone was hacking up stuff, and I'm still coughing, but at least I can get a night's sleep. That's all I really need. Just let me sleep through the night, please.
Oh, anyway. My goodness. Well, I bring that up because Robert's rocking The Dark Knight on a screen about 10 feet to my left, and every time Heath Ledger comes on, all I can think is, nobody panics when things go according to plan, even if the plan is horrible. Excuse me, horrifying.
I will say, I look at that particular movie on many TVs I review, just because it's content I've looked at repeatedly, and there are some well-shot sequences in that that are great for detail highlights, and as far as Blu-ray content goes, it's one of my, and it's something I actually like watching, so that helps.
It's a classic.
Although, again, here we are sitting with the sound off, so it's usually the visual stuff. But there are 4 sequences in that Blu-ray that are shot in IMAX cameras. Mm-hmm. So,
and a jarring transition, yes. I've always found it.
The aspect ratio shifts and everything. But those sequences in particular, I find, they're a mix of daylight, nighttime, skin tones, lots of great content to do some side-by-side comparisons with, which came in handy for another TV I looked at this week and had some hands-on time with that I'll get into in a little bit. But
it's a very exciting and very flat television.
Yes.
That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Crazy out-of-the-woodwork news from YouTube this week. It basically comes down to YouTube TV. 40 channels, $35 a month. And essentially, for your $35 a month, you not only get the 40 channels, you get 6 accounts, and you get a DVR with unlimited cloud storage, which, I assume they basically are just going to record everything on all those channels, then give you, markers in the cloud, in the big data there.
That would be an efficient way to do it.
They're going to build some AI-powered search and personalization, which I'm not too excited about, but it's pretty crazy, right? YouTube Red original programming in there.
That's nice.
ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, ESPN, Disney, Bravo, USA, FX, some regional sports networks, some stuff like Showtime and Fox Soccer Plus are add-ons.
Very cool.
Yeah, I was actually kind of, this is what everybody was expecting, I think, Apple to come out with a couple years ago. The final evolution or the big evolutionary step of the Apple TV, which, of course, has not happened. And all of a sudden, it's YouTube, of all people. And, of course, YouTube's always looking for a revenue stream.
Heck, yeah. I'll be curious to see if this account access will enable you to utilize some of the browser apps or the apps that are available from mm-hmm. different providers like ABC, Fox. Everyone's got their own app now. But in order to stream, especially the live content of any kind, right. You need some sort of a login, either through your provider of some kind, usually a cable or satellite provider.
Right.
And I find it awfully handy is that you can use those apps in lieu of another cable box in the house through a device like a Chromecast, my specific use case. However, I'm curious to see if this, if having YouTube TV somehow will let you click on a link like you can with your other providers to enable that access for the apps, because That would make it way more useful for me as well. Mm-hmm. For say, maybe I get NBC, but I don't get the NBC Sports Network or something right. odd like that, where I could just download the app. So those are the kind of use things where I'm like, what am I really getting here?
Well, they're very adamant, right? You know, you can watch YouTube TV on any screen, mobile, tablet, or computer, stream to your TV with Google Chromecast or a Chromecast built-in TV, Android, iOS, you know, the cloud DVR goes anywhere you have the internet.
I do find it funny that Google's pretty much recording everything broadcasting all the time now.
It's a pretty crazy, I mean, it's a pretty impressive, it's pretty crazy, pretty impressive list of channels, right? Because they've got, you know, I mentioned ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, CW, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN3.
It's like all the locals, what would be considered over the air, plus some premium cable channels too, or channels you wouldn't get otherwise unless you subscribe to a cable or satellite program service. So
I noticed that there's no real specification on what resolution the DVR will be functioning at.
Yeah. Considering my Chromecast Ultra, I'm pretty sure it doesn't even show me 4K pictures.
Right.
And I know the pictures are at least that resolution. So I would like to see more of that as well.
You know, I also have, to be honest with you, some concerns given how, I would say, atrocious, we want to be gentle and say vicious, the YouTube encoding is of the video that's stored on YouTube. I am hoping they apply a little more.
Use some of that AI to make a.
Or just be a little bit more generous with the bandwidth.
Yeah. I will say I have a friend who uses the PlayStation View service, mm-hmm. and they're probably going to about 6 months of it now, or I don't even know if it's been out that long, actually, but continues to be impressed with it. And it seems like they are doing a really good job of maintaining not only the current user base, but expanding features for what you are paying for. So I've heard no complaints about that. And that seems to be, those are like the services on my short list. I would be looking right. at YouTube TV or something like PlayStation View if I was really trying to get a live TV experience without paying.
Well, $35 a month is fairly inexpensive. Right? Sci-Fi is here, National Geographic Channel.
Oh, compared to cable or satellite service.
It's amazing.
Multi-year contracts and everything else. So
I will be very curious to see. I'm really curious to see what the image, you know, like what the video quality is when they finally roll it out.
Hey, and if that gives you access to YouTube Red too, there's one less thing you have to click on saying no to every other YouTube Red ad that pops up.
Well, I don't think
as a heavy YouTube user,
this isn't going to be ad free for $35 a month. It's just going to have very, very targeted Google ads rolling into it.
Understood.
Just saying, man.
Okay.
I'm just saying. It's a thing. Spotify may or may not be adding lossless streaming. The standard response from the Spotify HR team is basically that Spotify is always considering new and exciting opportunities for its user base. I'm joking a little bit there, but essentially they may or may not offer a lossless tier to compete with Tidal. Spotify's grown in a big way. Like they're up from, I want to say, 30 million to 50 million users since last March.
Nice.
I don't think they're making a profit yet, but they're growing like a weed. And if anybody at Spotify is perchance listening to the podcast, please send us an invite. I'll happily pay another $10 a month to get, you know, lossless streaming on Spotify because your interface is so much better than Tidal's.
I will say just CD quality is something I want in a streaming service. Mm-hmm. At least that quality. Yeah. And
Spotify Premium is good. I would still rather have lossless files.
Yeah. Because compare that to video, it's like nothing. It's nothing.
It's nothing.
To have the original CD quality.
Oh, man. Well, we're on a streaming rampage here. Quartz has an interesting article about Netflix new AI. And I see a note here, dynamic optimizer.
Yeah, scene-by-scene encoding, which after reading some of the things that we've talked about in terms of Netflix upgrading their encoding on the back end to save bandwidth and to improve picture quality, there are some egregious examples within their library in terms of things that just didn't come out looking all that great, in my opinion.
Almost all of the cartoons.
There's a lot of, especially dark scenes, mm-hmm. are some of the worst on any encode that you'll see streamed is just a blocky mess. And if they're applying something on a scene-by-scene basis now with their wonderful AI to go through that and to dynamically optimize it on a scene-by-scene basis, that is necessary because that will give you, no matter what your bit rate is, be it a mobile device on right. up to your, you know, multi-megabit home connection, you'll get a better picture quality no matter what. So I'm all for that. I'm not seeing anybody deliver anything close to what Blu-ray does in terms of a disc, in terms of streaming that quality of content.
I've been thinking about that a lot because it you know, in my
save for some premium examples, say the I want to say the folks who launched with Dolby Vision for their streaming service, which escapes me at the moment because of this head cold. Oh, where's my Sudafed?
Well, I was gonna say there was a kind of an argument on my Twitter feed. You know, people still buy Blu-rays. Fools! It's all available streaming. And I was thinking about that a lot because, you know, I was watching something awesome during prime time kind of viewing hours, and boy, everybody else was using the internet at the same time. Oh. And it was one of those moments where there's like, you know, you're watching an action sequence, you know, a driving sequence, a war sequence. Like the worst one ever, I think, was
the bit rate. It needs more bit rate to yes. show those consistently.
Yeah. Well, it was the worst one I've ever seen was when the Wachowski crew did the remake of Speed Racer.
Oh yeah.
That was out on DirecTV in its early HD versions.
Oh.
And when one of the race scenes would come around and it would just it just went 8-bit.
Yep.
For like this entire sequence just went 8-bit.
Especially
and not in a
like
really cool retro way.
Highly saturated colors yeah. like that movie featured. And other stuff that can either just get lost in the compression mm-hmm. or fast action.
Yeah.
More difficult to compress stuff. So seeing them up it to a scene-by-scene basis, why everyone isn't doing that for their pro video encodes anyway, just seems like, oh, really? About time. But
you would think.
Better video equals better video.
You go, Netflix. We're with you.
Put those bits in the right place.
And Spotify, offer a lossless tier.
Seriously?
I'm there for you, man. Oh, boy. We both had the sort of dueling home theater road trips, although technically mine was I got to go down to.
You're in SoCal?
I was in SoCal. I was in Torrance.
Oh, that was this weekend.
It was weekend before.
Yeah, but it wasn't in June like we had mentioned.
No.
Okay. I was just curious.
No, we corrected that before the podcast the last time, but there's a place called the Source AV.
Yeah, that was it.
Torrance, California, and I got to go down there the day before an event, and oh my goodness. First of all, let's talk about probably the nicest home theaters I've ever seen outside of Dolby, and certainly hanging with intensity and awesomeness with everything but the main Dolby theater, which is like seats, you know,
yeah,
300-400 people. But Source AV's Audio Video Design Group, and they have like 5 demo home theaters inside of there, from like, oh, you're an empty nester, here's what you can turn, you know, Jimmy or Jody's room into, all the way up to cost is no object, you know.
What happened to my bedroom?
JL Audio subwoofers and
some
crazy McCormick speakers.
Did they try to focus on different room sizes? Like
they literally had like 3 rooms that were about the same size, but it was like good, better, best. You know, you
good
won
deal.
The Oscar last year and you're looking to get a massive, you know, influx of capital and you really want to enjoy the screeners next year. This is the room for you.
That's nice in the sense because you can see a package at a set price integrated. And even if you don't go with the entire package, there probably be things in those setups that you'd be like, yep, that's the component I want for that. Or this would be ideal for this particular room. Or it sounds like an awesome experience with... What kind of content were they demonstrating these systems with? Mostly music, or
well, no, we did some music. We did a whole bunch of home theater clips.
Oh, cool!
And you know, I'll kind of dig into my notes later this year. But it was because I want to talk to them about what I can talk about. And they've actually the founder of the Source Audio Video Design Group comes out of a studio background, and then kind of got talked into helping someone build a home theater, and he basically wanted an acoustically, the kind of room he would record in, which is not completely, you know, there's some life in the room, but totally. There's a fair amount of you know, tuning to the room. So, you know, I walked into it. It was like some of the best recording places I've ever been inside of. And it was just top notch. So, if you're in SoCal and you're looking for a better home theater experience and you're ready to cut a check and get something amazing, it's pretty cool. They have Focal's entire lineup there. Excuse me, Focal's entire lineup there. All the way up to the 7 foot tall speakers that cost half as much as my house.
Nice. Now, does the Source AV do this like once a year, or is this something you can just show up?
They started, I guess a couple years ago, they started adding headphones to their lineup. And I'll have a couple of pictures I'll post on Twitter where it was literally, you know, 25, 35 of the best headphones you've ever wanted to listen to, all hanging on hooks on a wall with, you know, an extraordinary array of sources and amplifiers.
Get me a sleeping bag.
Yeah, I mean, literally, it was
a cot and a drink.
Yeah, I would like to get you there. You would enjoy the experience.
Sounds awesome.
But what was crazy is what they had down there was Sennheiser bought the Orpheus HE1, which is that, you know, $55,000
work of art.
You know, object d'art, if you will. Hi-Fi Man brought the Shangri-La, which is...
you and
Shangri-La.
I actually wore these at CES.
Yes.
There were two headphones driven by this, another work of art, tube amp design that it was just...
Which apparently was inspired by an aircraft carrier.
It kind of looked that way. It was...
Also priced out at $50,000. And Mr. Speakers was there. And Mr. Speakers started out doing mods for Fostex T50 RP headphones.
Right.
Which actually I learned that they have since open sourced that up on HeadFi, because they bootstrapped their business, right, building planar magnetic headphones, and then the next evolution was to build their electrostatic headphone.
Cool.
Yeah. Which they're in the words of Mr. Clark from Mr. Speakers, they're trying to make a statement. They're aiming to release this headphone for under $3,000, and then to have a complimentary amp that'll be around $2,000. It's going to take them a while to evolve the amp. They demonstrated with a Blue Hawaii amp, which is like a $6,000 electrostatic headphone amp. These are kind of, I mean, it's interesting. We should probably scroll back and talk about sort of an AV 101 moment, talk about what electrostatic is.
Yeah.
You know, so when you're thinking of a headphone or a speaker, it's usually a dynamic, typical speaker or dynamic headphone.
Magnet-driven cone, throwing air.
Yeah.
Or like shoving it back and forth.
A magnet surrounds a voice coil, which is attached to a cone. Signal runs through the coil, and that moves the cone, which moves the air. And you're talking about like everything from almost every speaker you see in daily life that's not 6 feet tall
from mobile device on up, pretty much, you know.
Monoprice, $83.23 is $20. Focal's Utopia, which are probably the best dynamic headphone available. Those are like $4,000. Planar magnetic, we've talked about in here, or orthodynamic.
So for electrostatic, though, okay.
I'm building here.
I want to know.
I'm building. So planar magnetic or orthodynamic, it's a plastic film, a diaphragm, and then they embed a voice coil. Is either embedded in it or glued onto it. The signal runs through the diaphragms, which work against the magnets in the headphone. So you get a big, flat, fast wall of plastic.
Sounds like a super taut
or
surface.
Or nanomaterial. Yeah, moving the air. That starts at like the Fostex T50 RP at $140. Hi-Fi Man's HE400S. A lot of people think that's one of the best headphones under $400. That's set for like $300. Mr. Speaker's Etherflow is amazing. That's $1,800. And, you know, built in San Diego, California.
Now, as far as speaker design goes, aren't most of those designs considered more optimized for mid to high, and then they pair them with a sub of some kind or a good low effects channel?
You know, it's I am...
Is it just depends on the design?
It depends on the design. Most speakers, it's funny. There's what they claim. There's what they deliver. and, you know, what you can actually hear, which are oftentimes three radically different things, right? Because if somebody says, you know, our speakers from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, we cover the entire range of you know, human hearing.
Right.
That's not entirely the most valuable spec. Because
at what power
levels? 15,
or?
Yeah, yeah. If it's down 15 decibels
yeah.
at 20 hertz, or it's down 35 decibels at 15,000 hertz, you know,
I can probably make an ultrasonic noise.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
Probably. Well, you know, I can still hear. I'm 46. I can still hear somewhere between 15, 15.5.
Not me.
Like 15,500, somewhere around.
I lost that ability a long time.
Well, but it's interesting because I've been playing around with some really nice earbuds from Vimota and One More this week, and the One More quad drivers are tuned so that they are, you know. They are bass head earbuds, right? And I really was thinking about that listening to.
Because I have their triple drivers.
Yes,
and
the
I
triple
like
drivers are fantastic. If you want more bass than the triple drivers, the quad is your headphone. It's also $200. It's twice
that's
as much.
My travel headphone, though.
Yeah,
I bring that with me. It's got the full mobile control for your mobile device on it. So it's got everything from the mic and the things you're used to. As
yeah, the
mobile
the triple
headphone.
Driver. One More's triple driver is my favorite. Like. You know, my favorite earbud.
I prefer Shure's smaller tip where the sound is actually emanated because
yeah.
it gives you some more options for ear tips.
Yeah.
But the folks at One More actually include about, I think, a dozen. More than
yeah.
a dozen
like
different
11,
tips to customize, fit, and finish.
And they have foam ones and silicone ones. They're,
totally.
That whole presentation case. And I will say, you know, there are, you know, the triple drivers cost about $100.
Yeah.
You know, you can
fantastic
get better value. Sound, but you're also going to spend 3, 4, 5 times as much for
totally.
That.
Totally.
But the
like my Shures I just mentioned are probably 2 or
yeah.
3 times that cost.
You so. Know, and I will say, like Monoprice 8323 is a $20 headphone that sounds alarmingly good. There are no $20 earbuds that sound remotely near a $100 earbud.
Yeah.
But that's a whole nother conversation. I won't go down that rat hole. But the but to talk about what you talk about with speakers is, you know, most speakers that we listen to are desperately in need of a subwoofer, you know, to handle, you know, everything below, you know, 50, 80 or 120 hertz.
That and just to preserve the limited amplification power of a lot of amps out there, too. If you're doing 5.1,
mm-hmm.
you want a powered sub. So you're not sending... Having that amplifier work so hard
yeah.
on the part of the sound that takes all the energy compared to the rest of the presentation. So.
Well, that was, I mean, one of the amazing things about this room at the Source AV is they had two of JL Audio's most frightening subwoofers.
Oh.
And, you know, there was a, I'm trying to remember what we were watching, but it was kind of a, you know, explosion-y, car crash-y kind of moment. And you forget that when you've got a particularly badass system that has powerful subwoofers, that you feel that stuff that's way down below your register of hearing. You feel it. And you can't really do that with a headphone. And you're certainly not going to do that with a speaker with a 4-inch driver or even a 6-inch driver. Right.
Very
so, true. You know, when you're looking at your speakers, that's why, you know, when you're setting up your you know, unless you actually have like, oh, yeah, I got, you know, 7 6-foot tall speakers and I've got, you know, 900 watts of amplification split across them, then you should pick large speaker in your AVR setup. The vast majority of the people out there, are we too loud? Oh. No. The, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Darren Kitchen from Hack 5.
In the house.
The, but the vast majority of speakers, you should automatically be
set to small. Always.
And, you know, a lot of times, you know, if the speaker you may want to experiment because the speaker manufacturer would be like 80 hertz is the cutoff point. But you may find that 120 hertz works a lot better if you've got a good subwoofer.
For most folks, though, it's always setting on an AVR setup. It's always set to small. And then you send all of that low frequency energy
yeah.
to the sub.
Yeah.
And to where it can be dealt with by
yeah.
a separate unit completely.
Because when you get down, I mean, there's a track I'm particularly in love with right now, which is Preservation Hall Jazz Band. That's it, and it opens up with this, you know, rank raw New Orleans jazzy number with this big fat tuba line underneath it, and you know, two tubas. They move a lot of air. A bass
oh,
cabinet,
yeah.
you know, Mike Watts, Gallian Krueger bass cabinet back in the day, that was like, you know, he had like two or three, you know, 15-inch speakers stacked up with a massive amp on top of them, because to have low end, you need to move a lot of air. That's what, for me, what was really mind-blowing when I started playing around with planar magnetics last year or the year before, it's starting to bleed together, was that these, you know, there was all this detail in these headphones, and they were pretty much flat down to like 20 hertz. Not that you can really hear 20 hertz that much, and there's no music down around 20 hertz. But it was nice to know that it was there if I needed it. So planar magnetic, plastic film, diaphragm with a voice coil embedded in it, and then electrostatics, which a lot of people consider the finest headphones on the planet, are electrostatics. Electrostatics are not portable, except, of course, for the Shure in-ear electrostatics. But you're essentially, you know, with most electrostatics, you're talking about having an amplifier that's running like 580 volts to your headphones.
Yes.
You know, very specialized, very unusual thing in home audio. And you're, you know, I like to say you're generating music from static electricity, which is a gross oversimplification. But what's interesting about electrostatic is you get a much faster wall to move the air, because you have this incredibly thin diaphragm with stators fore and aft of it. The audio signal is fed to the stators, and the diaphragm holds a charge. It gets pulled back and forth. So you basically are removing the weight of
your
voice
sound
coil.
Motor.
Yeah, literally. you know,
I like
and
that.
You know, this is and the tolerances on these are alarming.
Air motor.
Yeah,
air pump.
Air pump.
Something.
Well, you're basically right. You're moving a. You know, you have this big, flat, incredibly thin sheet of plastic, and I'm sure some engineer or headphone designer is going to slap me the next time they see me because I'm calling it plastic, but like, you know, you're talking about, you know, stuff that's basically right up there with nanotechnology. These are impossibly thin pieces of material.
Everyone looking at material sciences to find the new best thing to craft those speakers with, I'm sure.
Well, and what's crazy about it is when you have something that's effectively, you know, it's as close to weightless as possible, you start revealing a lot of detail in the music because the speaker isn't getting in the way of what's coming next as things are playing.
That makes sense.
You know, so, you know, it's also interesting that there are...
it's like the most dynamic cone you could do.
Yes.
In a horribly oversimplified fashion.
Well, but, you know, for purposes of the podcast, that works, though, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you they're about speed, they're about clarity, they're about resolution. That's a tile from Inner Fidelity. You know, the transient speeds are through the roof. The distortion is, you know, bordering on unmeasurable, right? So you have this incredibly pure signal. The wall moving the air is moving impossibly fast, which means it is incredibly responsive. It was really, really, it was really, really impressive to hear this, all of this. The Ether ES Electrostatic from Mr. Speakers. So they want to deliver that for under $3,000, $2,000 goal for the amp. So they're basically looking to deliver, you know, something that's going to compete with Sennheiser's Orpheus for a tenth of the cost.
See, the other thing, too, I go back to an event like the Source AV, and it sounds like if you try to request all of these headphones and try to get them in any reasonable time and really spend some time with them, it's going to be difficult to do from any review perspective. So it's nice to be able just to show up at an event like this.
Yeah.
And, you know,
if you have
unrushed and take your time. Granted, it's still you're showing up in somebody's backyard to do it, but
they had a, I mean, they basically,
convenience there.
They had a bunch of people that were signed up and that were going to, you know, this is, as far as anybody knows, this is the only time they've kind of had all of these in one place, you know, each in its own isolated room where you could go listen to all of them. You know,
Company reps there, like engineers,
yeah,
or anybody. Yeah. See, that's where it really gets fun too, because you can take the headphone off and then just quiz somebody about, what about that or this?
So yeah.
That's awesome.
You know, I got to send thank you notes to everybody because they let me listen to stuff for like, you know, a comparatively unlimited amount of time because I was there while they were setting everything up for the event the next day. So I got to send thank you notes.
They had the prods keeping everyone away.
Well, it's, you know, it was.
Take your time, Mr. Norton.
It's really impressive.
I hear you.
You know, the
literally.
The thing that Mr. Clark from Mr. Speaker said, he said, you know, decay is a huge part of, when the decay is right, the sort of the ending of the note is expressed properly, which, the speed of electrostatic helps it do that. He says, it's a key part of decluttering the landscape. You need an amp that can deliver it. But when the decay is right, the sense of space goes up.
Nice.
And there's just an incredible amount of detail in the electrostatic.
It sounds like you could have a very precise decay response in the audio when engineered properly on a system like that. Sounds like it's detail, not enhancing, but just revealing more than anything. So I see why they're beloved and so pricey, but...
Yeah, well, they've been
kind of wizardry audio tech.
There's a company called Stax that's out of Japan. There's currently no U.S. Dealer for them. Those are typically $5,000-$6,000. They've been around forever in various iterations. It was really it was neat to get to listen to all this stuff. I'm not running out to spend $50,000 anytime soon, but,
understood.
$5,000 is starting to look within reach, and it's if Mr. Speakers delivers right, the Stax SR09, which is not considered the sort of vanguard. It's like probably a lot of people consider it to be the best phone made that doesn't cost $50,000, but that's $5,200 without the amp. And Headamps Blue Hawaii is going to run you like $5,000 or $6,000. It was also a hoot for me because all this stuff was running off of tubes. and I will say...
There's a warmth to that sound that, there's an appeal to it. It's like the sound of vinyl or analog-ish.
Questyle was there with a new headphone amp. I'll talk about that a little bit next week.
Cool.
And some more affordable headphones, including... Mr. Speaker's Aeon, which is going to sell for about $800 and is a really nice sealed, very sort of travel friendly version of their sealed headphone or their sealed planar magnetic headphone.
Very cool.
Yeah, and the CMA400i, which is Questyle Audio Engineering, their new headphone amplifier, which is offering 2.5-millimeter balanced outputs for in-ear monitors along with like a 4-pin XLR and a quarter-inch unbalanced connection.
And I think a lot of folks think of headphones and they're thinking mobile products and things I'm using when I'm walking around. But everything we've been talking about for the last few minutes here really is made to be sitting in a quiet room.
Yeah.
Uninterrupted and you have to have the space to enjoy one of these. Because if you don't have a quiet environment, these are not the headphones for you.
Yeah. And that, I would amplify that by 1,000 because we both got to listen to the Shangri-La and the Orpheus.
Oh, hi-fi man.
At CES, but we couldn't actually hear because all I could hear everything through these are big over ear headphones that are essentially, full of holes.
Exactly, and we could hear the people behind us chatting away as much as we could hear what was coming through them. So
yeah, it was
something
to
keep in mind with this type of a head experience.
It was. I'd love to get to some of these guys to join us on the podcast to talk about stuff. But
heck yeah.
Yeah, man. This thing is still blows my mind about electrostatics. Like you're talking about a high bias voltage, like 580 volts is typical for a
probably
a
not an incredible amount of amps.
But no.
Probably rather low.
Nope. It's kind of crazy. In any case,
gotta make those pixies dance, man.
Make the pixies dance. You have a review.
Yeah. Today
a new product.
Is a brand new product launch from the good folks at Sonos. And they have a device called the Play Bass. And I will say it's one of the... I assume many Sonos products sound as good as... I don't know. It's probably my first long-term experience with one of their speaker products. Mm-hmm. And including their app software and things like that. I just came away phenomenally impressed with how good it sounded in terms of an easy upgrade for your home theater. This thing is about 18 pounds, and it's about 2.3 inches high. So the play bass is literally designed to sit or have your TV sit on top of it. And there are other companies have done similar designs. Bose, Sony, and I want to say one other. I just can't think of off the top of my head. The Playbase incorporates 10 speakers, each driven by its own Class D amp, 6 mids, 3 tweeters, and a sub. And ease of setup, number one, I would say, for the Playbase and probably most Sonos products out there. It is literally 2 cords to plug in, 3 if you're going to go Ethernet instead of wireless, and you launch the app and it guides you right through the rest of it. So just in terms of sound quality, the default setup with it was fantastic. Good stereo separation, music response. I felt overall with music, the sound was a little bright for my taste, but it provided a simple adjustment right within their EQ setup in the app to let you just fine-tune it however you like. One interesting aspect of the Sonos app software for iOS users only is a function called TruePlay, which I had a chance to experiment with. It's a room correction, speaker correction function.
I've used it with, we've got a Sonos 5, a Sonos 3, and a couple of Play 1s. By the way, the Play 1, a pair of the Play 1s in stereo is probably my favorite around the house listening.
And
they're all good, but
and
the Play 1s
if you happen to have any other of the Sonos products out there, you can link them to this to create up to a 5-1 setup if you really wanted to. Let's see. That TruePlay function, though, it is only available on iOS, so I actually had to go borrow somebody's phone to load up the app and actually try this function out. But I would say it literally doubled the size of the sound field as perceived of the speaker. And another thing, because of this design of a bass, typically the folks at Sonos said, you know what, about 70% of people, a lot of people want to wall-mount a TV when they buy it. Most don't. And most are setting their TV with the stand it came with on a piece of hard furniture. And with this play bass sitting on that hard furniture, it actually did a good job of reflecting some of the audio upwards and moving that sound field or that stage up to where the screen was, right where you kind of expect the audio to come out. And then after running the TruePlay room correction, it literally doubled almost the size of that sound field in that presentation right there at the speaker. So all around, it was just the simplicity of it. The app itself, I wish they would come up a way to use TruePlay on Android, but I understand for the consistency of the hardware on the iOS platform, it makes it easier to do mic calibration apps and things like that. Ease of use, what else? Music discovery, God, their app. I pointed their app at a NAS shared folder on our local network that had 11,000 FLAC files in it. It took about, I'd say, less than 5 to 10 minutes to index it within the software. But once that was done, any other device that logged in and had access to the Playbase and through that app could just browse through that music at will. There was no lag, no delay. Favorites and playlist functionality. Oh, one odd thing. Their software for the playlist and favorites, for whatever reason, is just not compatible with files actually stored on my phone, which was odd. And but other than that, that was pretty minor. But that ability then to access content you may already have, a variety of file format support, all your streaming services from, you know, all the popular folks, Pandora, Spotify, Tidal, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of them.
Nice.
Beta Plex support's in there, too, if you already got a Plex system rolling. Alexa support coming later this year. I would say, honestly, this is my first virgin experience with a Sonos product, and I came away overall going A-being it with an affordable 5-1 setup in the same room. And generally speaking, I'd come back to the Playbase, especially for just like literally having a 10,000-song music jukebox at your fingertips right there and be able to just launch that. And granted, there's a lot of functionality like that enabled, but ease of setup, sound quality, the detail as far as being able to hear content, especially voices and stuff, dialogue was superb. And it also
included just the single box parked under your television.
And after rolling through that TruePlay update too and optimizing it a little bit more, I thought the stereo separation got even better. And other than just for my own personal hearing, I like to knock the treble down on that particular system just a little. That didn't seem to interfere with that TruePlay setup either, so you could easily play with all those functions easily enough. And I just say it's a sweet sounding product, and I see why people love Sonos products so much.
$700?
Yeah.
So basically the same price as the Play Bar.
Totally. Built-in Wi-Fi, no Bluetooth. I was a little annoyed at that at first because I'm thinking, what if I don't even want to plug an optical cable into my TV? But in the end, I realized that this setup is so bulletproof in a sense. It's the power cable, that optical cable going back into the TV, done. And it links, I did it in this case, either wired or wireless. Both worked great. And then once that was done, you'll never have a link issue with your TV if it's done with a cable, you know?
Right.
So, and you're getting as good of quality from the output of your TV as it's delivering. So, for all that, I just, it worked great.
Thumbs up?
Oh, totally. Totally. There is a design I would like to see different, but I'll get into that maybe some other time.
Would you take that over an entry-level Denon AVR and a set of Energy 5.1 surround sound speakers?
Man, as a person who owns the Take Energy Classics, oh, that's hard. What is your comfort level? Because this is way easier. So I'll say that. When it comes to movies in Dolby Surround and other formats that give you the great surround effects, that's where it's kind of nice to have a full 5.1, even a modest setup. However, for this, it had terrific stereo. And even decent, I'm not going to say it had any kind of 3D effects per se, but I never felt I was really missing out on much, except for when it came to the movies. And even then, it was such an improvement over what you're going to get out of your TV. Again, if you're stuck listening to TV speakers, and if you have any kind of hearing issues whatsoever, I'm astounded at how bad TVs sound, even the newest ones. So, Playbase, solid product, man. If it works for you. Now, the very first TV I tried this on was one of the very most popular sets sold last year, and it didn't fit under it. It was one of the TV types that had the two legs instead of a central stand. So be aware of the height of that product, the height of it, and how much clearance you have under your TV if it's one of those separate feet stands where they have a foot basically on the left and the right. And make sure you have clearance for it. But otherwise, that was it. I think that would work with a majority of TVs out there. That 70-pound weight requirement fits a lot of different sizes out there. When I picked up the unit, no signs of flexing or creaking or anything. They have a really cool grill design, too. They claim they actually drilled this. There's about 43,000 holes on this grill that increase in diameter as it rolls around the edges. So there's more air moving to the sides than it is out the front. And if you put your hands on the sides of this thing during any kind of bass reproduction, you feel it. And it was just a terrific sound experience overall. And especially just the cleverness of being able to reflect enough of that sound upwards and to really move that field up to the screen itself or that presentation really seemed that it was coming more out of the screen than looking down at the device itself where the actual sound is generated. And I liked it. No worries at all.
I guess the just point out, I don't think Energy's making the Take 5 anymore. It's
still
on their website, but you can't find it for sale. So I guess
I should sell the ones I have then.
The Pioneer SPPK22BS, that's the Andrew Jones design Pioneers.
Those are much larger in terms of speaker size. But so if you're thinking of swapping up to those, I recommend them, but they are larger. So.
Yeah, those are, if you can find those are $500 from Amazon. Oh, yeah, $520 from Amazon for the Pioneer Andrew Jones 5.1 home theater package. And I've heard good things about Monoprice's 5.1 system.
Totally.
But that would be, you know, between the speakers, the entry-level speakers, the Pioneers, and an AVR, you're talking about $1,000 right there. Plus, you have to cable it. Plus, you have to mount the speakers, find a place for the subwoofer.
It's Playbase is a product that's to be simple for like the largest subset of those users.
Yeah.
So, and I think it scores on that one. And if you happen to have other Playbase products, it will link right into that ecosystem quite nicely.
Well, that's what I've always said. People are like, "Oh, you're still using Sonos, you know. Samsung's doing this, so and so's doing this. Who's and what's doing that?" And I'm like, you know,
whose app are you using to drive it all?
The Sonos, the thing about Sonos is the app works.
I was pretty impressed. Especially once I linked it to my shared folder in the network. And I was like, holy crap, this just... Because most of the time I look at things like that on other apps, it's like it just doesn't handle streaming out a 250 gig folder very well. Or it's just unusable. This was just fluid. And we were creating... I was listening to content I hadn't heard in a while just by the nature of, oh, let's random shuffle 12,000 tracks and see what happens. And it worked. Anyway, big thumbs up on that. And I will hopefully be able to talk about some upcoming stuff from them here soon as well. But that just launched today. $700. Playbase, awesome. Also this week, I took a look at the hands-on time with that W7 wallpaper OLED from LG.
In case you don't remember from CES 2017, the LG W7 wallpaper is 3.85 millimeters thin.
That's mounted on the wall.
Yeah. 65-inch will cost about $8,000. It's 6,600 pounds sterling, 11,000 Australian dollars. And there will also supposedly be a 77-inch version. No one knows
what
the price on that's going to
Don't
be.
Don't hold your breath on that one. I will say, the W7, like all of the 2017 OLEDs that LG is putting out this year, they all have consistent, unlike last year, this year we're going to have consistent chipsets, and the panels will be the same across the board as last year, but like they did last year. They had consistent panel tech in each one, but there were some chipset differences across the line that made things a little odd in edge cases. This time around, super consistency as far as the panel build, chipsets. One oddity of last year's OLEDs, if you ever looked at them in a well-lit room, you'd notice, and the screen was off, you'd notice a red glare, a red reflection from that panel surface. The panel was colored red.
Right.
And it didn't look that hot in a well-lit room. This year, that panel is reflecting pure black, and it looked fantastic. HD reproduction, had a chance to put my meters on it and roll through some tests there. Superb right out of the box. Fantastically low color errors. Good, solid grayscale performance. Less crushing in the dark blacks compared to last year's models.
Define crushing, sir.
The darkest grays. Eventually, your grays step down to black in the video signal. And those steps coming out of black shouldn't be invisible. And if you can make the picture look more contrasty by making, the brighter grays black, or just simply turning off that bit of detail. And there may be reasons you want to not show that detail there. Maybe the panel has a problem with noise or other artifacts within there. So they'll purposely restrict that performance right in that area of it to mask that issue. This year, I'm seeing far better coming out of black in terms of that dark detail, and you'll see it in movies and other scenes like that. Color accuracy was fantastic too after running through color check tools and other things like that. I measured it before and after calibration, and it was the errors are literally reference quality right out of the box, but the fine tuning took it to a whole nother level and just really tightened everything up nicely. And for that, I was quite pleased. And then when it came to HDR, they have added 2-point white balance now for HDR setup, unlike last year where it had this crazy 20-point system that nobody really had their head wrapped around, I think. I would say that HDR calibration worked fantastic as well. Let's see. For gamers out there, the HDR game mode was, I measured it at about 20 milliseconds. So that's right up there with some of the best TVs. So if they can get this damn firmware update pushed to hopefully some of those 2016 TVs too, we'll see some better HDR gaming performance as well. Let's see. One oddity, and I do expect this to happen with other value HD TVs that are value UHD TVs that'll be coming out this year. But I've often said that when you're showing HDR content, if the TV is incapable of a certain light level, say it can only hit 700 nits, I have often said that if there's detail above that, the TV would just blend it all and crush it, or clip it, in a sense. That is really up to the individual manufacturers I'm seeing for this year. I am seeing no one that is clipping detail all the way out to 10,000 nits now. If that content, there are movies you can get on ultra high def Blu-ray that are authored to 4,000 nits, and these TVs that are simply incapable of it will still show that detail. And that's all through the tone mapping that goes on within the processing of the TV. Its ability to map content greater than it's capable of showing into its own performance envelope. And I really thought that was going to be kind of a hard, fast rule that says, oh, if you have a 1,000-nit TV, you don't show details above that. But I think that's all been tossed out the window at this point, and we're back to how it used to be in terms of, oh, if you really want to make sure you're seeing full detail, turn that contrast down, level down a little bit. However, that tone mapping is very specific to the particular panels and how they have set it up, so it'll be interesting to see how this pans out in terms of how we'll actually benchmark these sets in the future, and how we'll be able to tell someone which panel is better, regardless of, say, the contrast performance of the TV. And one way we're going to be looking at doing that, or one way I'm seeing put forth, is describe the number of just noticeable luminance levels that the TV can do. So this TV A can show you 100 steps throughout the HDR range, or TV B can show you 300 steps in that same piece of content, a more detailed view based upon what you can actually see. So those are some of the cool things I see coming up in terms of just benchmarking. Let's see, what else about the W7? That soundbar, you're stuck with it. There's no getting around that.
It doesn't look as much, you know, in the pictures they're showing on the LG's website now, it doesn't look quite so much like Kylo Ren's helmet as it did at CES.
It's growing on you. I would say that is great audio for TV speakers. It's nice to be able to have that on the outside. I'd rather just have it all in the panel and ignore the speakers and the TV altogether. So maybe that design's not for me, but it is awfully thin, and it looks awfully good on the wall. So I'll leave it there.
There you have it.
Heading out to Samsung in like about a week to go see their launch event in New York, and they may have, hopefully, a full array local dimming set to show off, introduce, maybe. If not, otherwise, I have an opportunity to dig into the Q9 some more, and I'll report back on that. And then finally, busy week. Dolby Labs. I had a chance to tour their new lab facility here in San Francisco. Within this facility, it's an old building that they retrofitted, and they put their Dolby Cinema Theater in there, and I mentioned that a couple weeks ago. There are about 100 or so individual labs within this building, and they had so much great stuff in terms of just being able to go from one room to the next and talk to some of these engineers and see what they're working on. Some of their rooms where they sit in with the best folks in Hollywood to go over content they're looking at. Places where they'll be testing. Went into one of the test rooms for Dolby Cinema, where they're testing new projectors and speaker systems and things like that. And that was just terrible fun. Plus, they have a lot of artwork in this building. Very creative stuff, given the history of this company. So that, and it's in a beautiful location right on Market Street with a very nice mezzanine to look around. And anyway.
It's good stuff.
Awesome. Awesome times there. Great to just hang out with their engineers for a day and just really pound on what makes good audio, what makes good video, and see real-world examples, mostly for commercial use, but also more and more for consumer. So, I'm so sick still. Excuse me.
Robert was about three quarters dead last weekend, making squeaking noises when he was able to move. Oh, not a lot of Blu-rays out this week. Moana, definitely a high point. Jackie, which is a very different story than Moana, to say the very least. And for the old school cinema 70s fans, actually technically 1981, Blake Edwards' S.O.B. is out on Blu-ray, I believe, for the first time.
Flashback!
I'm not entirely sure I'm ready to see S.O.B. again, but my boys and I are looking forward to seeing Moana, which just is good, clean fun.
Nice.
Yeah, actually, it's like 95% on the tomato meter, and Looks spectacular from the clips I've seen of it. And if you're not familiar with Jackie, it is Jacqueline Kennedy, basically Jacqueline Kennedy's passing through or evolution after the assassination of John F. Kennedy, with Natalie Portman playing the title role.
Cool. I finished up a game called Firewatch on Steam.
Really?
Highly recommended. It's about 4 hours long. It's an impressive game to me in the sense of your individual perception about what you think is going on will really kind of give you a unique story in terms of a presentation.
It's a mystery.
It
slash
is.
Adventure.
Well, you literally are a guy out in the forest in a fire tower in Wyoming.
Right.
Spending the summer out there.
Like the Shoshone National Forest, I think it is. And it's literally from a real national forest in Wyoming.
Super low key. I mean, literally, the main control in the game is you talking on a walkie-talkie to someone else. And some strange things do occur. But, hey, you're out in the middle of the woods. Odd things occasionally happen. I will say the audio is pretty cool. Dynamic-ish soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
Kind of foretelling as you walk around sometimes. It's like, oh, man, something bad's about to go down. I will say there's also a camera feature in the game. You find a disposable camera in this game. Do yourself a favor, take lots of pictures, and watch the final credits. It's kind of a neat ending to that.
Interesting.
And
$20.
Yeah. On sale for $15 occasionally.
Available on Steam for Windows, Mac, and Linux, PlayStation 4, Xbox One.
It is definitely adult-themed in terms of the conversations that go on and stuff like that. So you'll be answering questions if you play with your kids with this game. So, and then afterwards, you can do it right off the bat, but they also have a cool, as you walk around the game, if you're done with it, they old-school like Walkman with cassette tapes, and there are little stands throughout the whole game world. You can enable this, and it gives you... audio commentary from the developers and people who worked on specific aspects in the game. And there were a few parts of it that were just like, how did you guys think of this or that? And so that made it kind of neat. So I'll throw that out there. Like I said, it probably had 4 or 5 hours of gameplay. Mm-hmm. I had to put it down a couple times just because I was getting... It was messing with my perceptions as to what I thought was going on. So
I've explained some interesting signal messages I got from you.
Oh. But I really liked the way it ended. And... it was thought-provoking and kind of different. I dig it.
Cool. If you are curious about the Nintendo Switch, my partner in crime on Tech Thing is going to be reviewing the Nintendo Switch and has nothing but joy to express for the new Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild that's out with the Switch.
Nice.
So, although there are not a lot of games out for it as of yet, but it just launched.
I'm still stuck on the PlayStation 3 with... Grand Theft Auto 5. One of these days, I'll actually finish it.
One of these days.
I did Firewatch, though. That I recommend.
You know what? I should order the Moana Blu-ray right now. Mm. Pre-orders, man.
Mm.
Pre-orders are good. With that, ladies and gentlemen,
I love it.
We are going to have two patron hangouts this month. If you are not familiar with how we keep the shop running here, we require your patronage. We ask, we beg, we plead. We would appreciate it if you would support us on patreon.com/avxl. It's a way for you to basically subscribe and help pay the bills and pay us to keep the show going. And part of that, of course, for people who contribute at the higher tiers would include our monthly hangouts. We're going to do one on the 16th this month and one on the 30th. Those are both Thursdays. And those are just easier for us to schedule. I think we'll do one in the morning and one in the afternoon, unless you all yell at us at ask@avxl.com and tell us what time you would prefer it.
We'll throw up a Twitter poll.
Twitter polls. I have a complicated relationship.
Trying not to cough. Or have stuff fly out of my
head. I haven't seen your lungs come out of from behind your teeth today.
I am much better than
that's a big improvement.
A few days ago.
I hear you were walking around with your lungs outside of your chest.
Man, there's just much coughing a human being can take.
There is only so much coughing a human being can take. And then there is morphine.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness.
No opiates.
lay off that. That would be bad. With that, ladies and gentlemen, hey, viewer questions are normally a big part of the show, but we had so much hands-on time with so much shiny stuff this week.
Seriously.
We were a little low. Well, we didn't do any viewer questions or listener questions this week. So do us a favor, send them out to ask@avxl.com or at Patrick Norton or at Robert Heron or at AVXL if you are so inclined, and we will pack next week's show with giant piles of viewer questions because we are here to serve you and make this the most interesting exploration of home theater and home entertainment and music and audio. And yes, people, we like the games and the VR too.
Couldn't have put it better, man. Oh, all man. Sources, all times, making it good, making it easy.
I don't know about easy.
Well,
okay, easy.
I got
okay.
Sudafed on the brain now.
Oh, the Sudafed's kicking in. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Heron.
We'll see you next week on AVXL.